Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You've heard Frank Baker, what's going on in Boston. Well, let's broaden it a little bit, and let's welcome back to the microphone our friend, Professor William Jacobson. He is a professor of law at a great law school, or what I thought was a great law school until recently. He is the clinical professor of law and director of the Securities Law Clinic at Cornell University Law School. William Jacobson. Professor Jacobson, welcome back to Nightside. How are you?
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me back.
Well, you are a victim. You are becoming a victim of the McCarthyism of the 21st century. I don't know if you agree with my characterization of it, but what is being done to you right now is the same thing that was done in the 1950s to individuals in Hollywood who were forced out of their business by others who disagreed with them politically. And I'm going to explain that, but I'm going to ask you to explain it. You have a website called Legal Insurrection. You have been a lawyer for how many years? I know you graduated from Harvard Law School, 1980s.
Yeah, I graduated from Harvard in 1984.
Right, that's I thought Harvard so. So Law you've School. You've now been a lawyer for more than 35 years, and you have been a professor at Cornell University Law School in Ithaca, New York, high above Cayuga's waters, for 12 years, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and you have written a couple of articles on your blog, or at least one article on your blog, in which you looked back at the birth of a political movement that is very much in the headlines today, Black Lives Matter. And you now find yourself under a withering fire for essentially writing about what you learned about the birth of this organization. Or am I oversimplifying that?
No, not really. What happened is I've been covering and following the Black Lives Matter movement since its inception. It started after the Trayvon Martin case, which I followed very closely on my website. In fact, we live blogged the trial. Mm-hmm. But it really got its launch after the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson in 2014. And so I'm very familiar with it, and I've continued to write about it over the years. So this is a subject I'm very familiar with. We've published research studies on the activists involved. Multiple times I've written write-ups about the group long before, you know, the George Floyd killing or anything like that. So I'm very familiar with it. And so when I recently saw the protests with people marching with their hands up saying, don't shoot, I recognized immediately what that was. That was the narrative formed by the Black Lives Matter movement in 2014 after the Michael Brown shooting, the claim being that he was killed by a racist policeman who shot him when his hands were raised and he was saying, don't shoot. Very dramatic. And it has given birth to the ethos of the movement, which is anti-police and portraying the police as cold-hearted killers. But I knew that to be false, because what happened is Michael Brown's shooting was investigated. The policeman was not prosecuted. The Justice Department under Eric Holder, the Obama Justice Department, did a thorough investigation to determine if there were any civil rights violations. They determined there were none. And they also determined that the hands up, don't shoot never happened. Michael Brown never had his hands raised and he never said, don't shoot. He was shot dead when he punched a policeman in the face and tried to steal his weapon. He made a second charge at the policeman, and that's when he was shot dead. So it was a legally justifiable shooting by the police. So when I saw this happening, I wrote about it. I said, this is a fabrication. The people are marching in the streets using a fabricated narrative. And I wrote about that. I wrote a second column article at my website, harshly criticizing the rioting, the looting, the tearing down of society that went on. This is back in the beginning of June, before really the statues and things were being attacked. It was more the looting and that sort of violence. And I related that to what I also knew about the founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, which is that, first of all, they were avowed Marxists, which they are. There's plenty of video floating around now. Their goal was to tear down society, and their goal is to exploit racial tensions to achieve, how they perceive the remaking of society. So I wrote about all this. I also said that the people who are coordinating the violence, and that was the specific term I used, the people who are helping coordinate the violence need to be identified by the federal government, because state and city mayors and governors in Democratic cities are unwilling to do it, and those people need to be identified and prosecuted. And that's what I wrote.
So, those are your viewpoints. Yeah. You wrote it as a lawyer and as a scholar and as someone. If anyone wants to call and challenge you in terms of you've identified these folks as Marxists, people who have in leadership at least. And again, the leadership of the group seems to me to be very difficult for me to kind of, you know, get my finger on. Most of the time you can identify leaders. I know there was an individual who made some rather incendiary comments this week. I think he was being interviewed by Martha McCollum on Fox, and he talked about literally burning the system down, and he said you could take that figuratively or literally. Are you familiar
right,
with
but
the comments?
There is an organized movement, and this is one of the interesting things about Black Lives Matter. It's a hashtag. It's a saying. But it's also a movement. I mean, it was founded in 2013 and 2014 by specific people, and there are, you know, there is an ethos, there is a philosophy to that organized movement. And so I wrote these things. People can agree with me or not. I wrote them on my website. I didn't say them at school. I didn't teach them in class. My website's completely separate. And what happened after that is a few days later, some alumni started to email the dean of the law school demanding that I be denounced and that I be fired.
Yeah.
And it was a fairly organized effort. And we know it was organized because some of them were using templates, so form complaint letters about me. Then 21 of my colleagues signed a letter against me, accusing me of supporting institutionalized racism and police violence. Because I called for the people responsible for the violence to be arrested and identified, that led to the accusation by colleagues of mine that I was supporting institutionalized racism and institutionalized police brutality. Then various student groups started to petition and put together petitions. They originally wanted me fired, but then I've learned that they changed it and scaled it back a little bit because they thought that would make them look bad. So they issued statements and circulated different things saying that I should be denounced and that even incoming students should be warned about me. And then the dean of the law school denounced me. So basically what happened is, I stand alone there as having spoken what I believe to be the truth about the movement. I challenged people to a debate. I don't claim to have an exclusive possession of knowledge or correctness. And so, you know, what I did is I said, well, let's debate it. Let's organize a debate. You can have a student representative and a faculty representative. So I didn't want it to be that it's me against a student. So from these groups, one student, and you pick the faculty member you want, and let's organize a debate and let's hash it out. And I'll hear your viewpoint. We can hold it at the law school when classes resume. We can live stream it. I think this would be a really good thing. So that's been rejected too. And so basically where we are now is not only have I been denounced by colleagues, the law school, there are alumni still trying to get me fired. They're refusing to debate, but about a dozen student groups have also called for a boycott of my course, which they not only want to boycott themselves, they are telling other students they should not take it. So that's where we are. It's a completely toxic situation. You use the analogy of the McCarthy era. The analogy, I think, is more more apt, particularly with what's going on in the country, is the Chinese Cultural Revolution. It's much more penetrating than McCarthyism. It's much more of a purge than McCarthyism was. And so I think, and a lot of other people have used this analogy, you know, we see people getting fired for any criticism of Black Lives Matter. We see people getting fired for saying, well, I think all lives matter. That's now a fireable offense.
Well, the reason that I use McCarthyism is a lot of people would say, well, you know, we're not China. What went on in China, of course, is horrible. But, you know, people lost their careers in some cases because they actually were Marxists back in the day, back in the 50s. But also in some cases, people who were not Marxist, who happened to be liberal or democratic activists. I remember, you know, Richard Nixon ran against Helen Gahela Douglas, who was he called her Helen the Red. She was the United States Senator at the time. So it's the language that's being used towards you and the intolerance of people who claim to be so tolerant. My guest is Professor William Jacobson of the Cornell University Law School. If there's some Cornell alumni out there tonight, love to hear from you particularly. But I'd love to hear from those of you who have complained to me that on college campuses, there is only one point of view that for the most part is acceptable. I've argued that the cancer that has been on college campuses for many years, where there was a predominantly predominant point of view, and any other points of view were either marginalized or disallowed, that cancer has now metastasized into our society. But we will talk more with Professor William Jacobson. His website, Legal Insurrection, 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. If you support free speech on colleges, if you support free speech at all, I'd love to hear from you. And if you disagree and would like to take Professor Jacobson and comment or critically, feel free. We can have a conversation here on Nightside. That's what we do. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. Let me get something clearly out of the way, because I think this is going to sound to you like a stupid question, but I assume you saw the killing of George Floyd, the video of that.
Yes.
What was your reaction?
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you saw that?
My reaction, as I expressed on my website, is that it was extremely difficult to watch the video where he's crying that he can't breathe, where he's crying for his mother, and the policeman's knee is on his neck. That's extremely difficult to watch. And based on the evidence that was available to us, I did not see any justification for that use of force.
Okay.
So that was the opinion I expressed. That's the opinion I hold. Of course, criminal trials are criminal trials. We only know what we know. And I also have written that based on the medical examiner's report, there could be issues with the murder charge from a legal analysis because you have to prove that the knee on the neck was the cause of death, and there's some question about that. But I clearly expressed grave concern for what was done to him, and that it was extremely difficult to watch.
Well, I would take the case as a prosecutor any time. I wouldn't want someone's knee on my neck for 8 seconds, never mind 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And in addition, you do recognize, and I just want to make sure I'll ask you the question. I'm not going to ask you as a leading question. Do you recognize the fact that there have been incidents in this country of police brutality towards individuals, and oftentimes individuals of a different racial background, black or brown people?
Yes, of course. I mean, I agree with that. I'm all in favor of better policing. I'm all in favor of, you know, dealing with issues that regard, you know, racial components of policing. None of that is in dispute. You know, I think.
Right. No. And that's and I feel silly asking these questions, but I do not want to leave any doubt in anyone's mind, Professor. I hope you understand what I'm doing.
I think there's near universal, and it's certainly something I've expressed, concern with excessive use of force, concern with policing, concern with racial profiling and other things. I mean, these are all issues we can unite behind. I think the vast, vast majority of the country can unite behind, as opposed to having those issues exploited to create further racial tension. I mean, my philosophy, again, is nothing I'm saying tonight for the first time. I've said it many times, is that our goal should be equal treatment of everyone without regard to their race. I mean, that is the goal of the civil rights movement. And I consider that a lot of the goals of some of the activists nowadays are not consistent with that, that the racialization of every issue, the viewing everything that happens in society through a racial lens, is actually destructive to our society. And we need to hold to the ideal that everybody is entitled in this country to equal protection and equal opportunity without regard to race.
Could not agree with you more. Well said. Now, I referenced in that last segment, and I want to get your comment on this. This is a gentleman who I believe is considered by many to be one of the original founders, if not the original founder, of the Black Lives Movement. His name is Hawk Newsom. He was interviewed by Martha McCollum. I believe it was on Monday night of this week. We have this on Cut 2. If you haven't heard this soundbite, or if you have, either way, I'd like you to react to what he said during this interview with Martha McCollum. Go ahead, Rob. Cut 2, please.
If this country doesn't give us what we want, then we will burn down this system and replace it. All right. And I could be speaking figuratively. Okay. I could be speaking literally. It's a matter of interpretation.
I could be speaking literally or figuratively, burn down the system. Your reaction to that comment?
Yeah, well, I have seen his comment recently. I mean, he wasn't one of the original three, but he is someone who's gained some prominence. And unfortunately, this is exactly what I'm talking about, that there are leaders in the movement who are, if not outright encouraging violence, certainly justifying it, and who are saying, you know, given to our demands that we burn the system down. And that's the problem. Now, you know, Black Lives Matter, there certainly are many people who have the sign in their window or marched peacefully, but the rioting and the looting that took place was widespread. It was pervasive. It was not isolated. I've seen the statistics recently. In the first weekend of rioting and looting, there were at least $400 million in damage done. I think that the total in Minneapolis alone is over $100 million. Nationally, it's into the billions of dollars. Entire neighborhoods were burned, business districts burned. So, you know, this attitude of give us what we want or we'll burn it all down actually played out in real life. And that was the whole point I was making, that this is a movement led by activists. And that's the term I use, led by activists who do not have the country's best interest in mind or in heart when they advocate these sort of things. And that's what played out. And they are exploiting people who have good intentions in order to achieve what are bad intentions on their part.
Now, I would argue a little beyond that. I would argue they are trying to appropriate a cause that is right and just for a political ideology that is foreign to everything that most Americans, black, white, yellow, brown, red, believe in, and that they are trying to appropriate a just cause for their ideological beliefs in Marxism, and they would like to turn this country into Cuba or Venezuela at the end of the day. That's my thought. My guest, Professor William Jacobson, professor at Cornell University Law School. He is a professor, a clinical professor of law and director of the Securities Law Clinic He has been there for 12 years. We will get to phone calls forthwith. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. He has a website called Legal Insurrection, which you might be interested in checking out. Let's go first to Jack in Newton. Jack, welcome to Nightside. How are you, my friend?
Well, first, Professor, I'm also a professor, and you shouldn't be fired, and they shouldn't boycott your classes. So even though I may disagree with some of the things you're saying, I would say that's wrong, and that's, you know, part of the political correctness. So you have not gotten any support from, let's say, Professor James Turner at Cornell. He's a friend of mine. He's a black professor. Have you ever gotten support from him at all?
I have not received support. I have not received support from any professor, privately or publicly. I have received a lot of support from students, and here's what's really wrong with the situation. I've received a lot of messages from students that I have a lot of support in the building, but people feel they have to be quiet, that they can't speak up. They're all afraid to speak up, and they're all afraid to defend me because they have a fear, and I think it's a legitimate fear, that if they go up against the current situation, that they will be accused of being racist. They're early in their careers. They haven't even launched their careers yet. And even though that would be a completely false accusation, they cannot run the risk that that would somehow get onto the internet and that it would damage or cripple their job prospects. So there's a climate of fear among the students about speaking up, not just to defend me, but speaking up on the issue of the Black Lives Matter organized movement either. And that's really, I think, the tragedy here. It's taken.
What about Professor James Turner? He's the leader.
No, I don't know. I don't know him.
The Africana.
I've not heard from him.
Yeah, let me, I just am looking at this here. Okay. Professor Turner is the founding director of the Africana Studies and Research Center, founded in 1969. Professor Emeritus of African and African-American Politics and Social Policy at Cornell. What I'd like to suggest, Jack, if he is, Jack is what I would consider to be a classical liberal, Professor Jacobson. He and I often disagree, but we tend to always part as friends. What you might do here, Jack, Professor, in the spirit of academic freedom, make Professor Turner aware of what's going on, and if he would be willing to reach out to Professor Jacobson, again, not necessarily agreeing with him, maybe he might, I don't know, but at least support him in his right to express his opinion and not be penalized for expressing his opinion at a university. Obviously, Professor Turner, I assume, is not at the law school. He's either at the undergraduate or another graduate school.
He's a sociologist, but very
right.
Well,
no, I'm saying so. Because he apparently does. He has some graduate students as well as undergraduate students.
Professor Jacobson doesn't know him.
Well, Professor Jacobson is a law professor. Do you think he was not answering you honestly, Jack?
No, I'm just saying. James Turner is one of the most well-known professors.
Well, I don't want to. What I'm saying, Jack, is I think you've made your point, you know, Professor Jacobson, who I know to be someone who's truthful, said he does not know him. What I'm suggesting to you is, since you know Professor Turner so well, maybe you could reach out to him, make him aware of the situation, and he could be the first professor up there who would stand with Professor Jacobson.
Can I ask him a methodological question, Professor Jacobson? Have you interviewed the leaders of the movement? Have you interviewed, and how many have you interviewed?
No, I have not interviewed, but I've read extensively their writings. We've written about it. I've watched many of their videos. So I have not interviewed them, but I think I've learned a lot about them over the years. And again, this is not something that's new. I've been following this since 2014.
And these are black leaders who are Marxists, these leaders?
Oh, well,
yes.
Give them a chance to talk about
it. I don't even think they would know the difference between Stalin and Trotsky. I can't believe that they even know what Marxism is, some of these leaders.
Well, that's how
Antifa. I'm not talking about Antifa. I'm talking about the black women and men who lead the black movement. Myers, I don't think they read Marxism at all.
Well, they self-describe that way. Whether they are scholars on it or whether they're knowledgeable about it, they self-describe that way.
What I might suggest, Jack, and again, I know that you like to research, His website is called Legal Insurrection, and I think you might be intrigued by it. The scholarship that he applies both in the classroom and on Legal Insurrection, I think you would be impressed by, Jack.
I'm suggesting, Jack, and I've suggested it the third time now.
Here's what I'm suggesting, Jack. You have described a friendship with Professor Turner, and if I was in your position and was a close friend of Professor Turner, maybe you could reach out to him. Tell Professor Turner that Jacobson of the law school at Cornell was on my program. I think you respect the guest who I have on the program. At least you have.
I will do that
previously.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
That's great. And let's see what happens. It might be that there'd be an academic breakthrough here, Jack, that you could be involved in basically getting people. And I don't know. Professor Turner might agree, might disagree, but he certainly, I would hope.
On the principle of free speech, this should not happen to Professor Jacobson.
Exactly.
On free speech alone, he should not be fired, and he should not be boycotted. Absolutely.
You got it. Jack, thank you so much for your call, as always. Appreciate your call. Have a great night.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mike is in New Hampshire. Mike, you're next on the RingCentral Nice I Caught a Line. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Dan and Professor. This is really bothering me, is the attachment to labels that people have. I don't understand it, and it seems so easy to exploit through social media and hashtags and everything. So let's say I started Black Lives Matter, and I had my goals and everything were genuine, and why, when it gets spinned in another direction, why must people hold on to the label? Why can't we just move on and say, okay, BLM now means something different? We don't represent what the masses are saying, so let's just come up with a new name.
Well, I think it would be great if whoever the leaders are currently, and again, the leaders of Black Lives Matter, and I'm going to ask Professor Jacobson this, I think that they sort of self-assert that they become leaders in their time there. They're not elected officials. I think that if they were to step forward, whoever the leaders are today, and denounce Marxism and denounce the tactics of the looters and the rioters and adopt the philosophy of nonviolence of Dr. Martin Luther King, I think that they would move the whole conversation forward, and I think it would be good for everyone. Would you agree with that, Professor?
Yes, I agree. I think that, you know, they have that obligation.
Mike, is that what you're suggesting, Mike?
It's more in general, because you can look at something like, I'm the most unracist person. I'm white, but I have black friends.
Congratulations.
Now, nationalism, everything like that. What is it? White nationalists or whatever. There's people that literally argue that I could get into a debate with, that I could hear their side and see that they're not racist, that they had something. But the word nationalist now is synonymous with supremacy, white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when that happens and that becomes synonymous with your label, move away from the label. Why do you continue to defend it? What is the big deal of the label? The label is just a label. It's the meaning that matters.
So it seems to me that your argument, and if I'm misreading you, Mike, please tell me, it seems to me that your argument is not so much with Professor Jacobson, but your argument is with the leaders who have.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with Professor Jacobson.
Okay. Great. Okay.
I see what he's saying, and I've been following it as well. And I would be afraid to speak up, mostly, especially out of context and then just a regular conversation. Doesn't matter.
You're breaking up on us here, Mike. I hope. Are you moving in a car by any chance? Mike, if we lose you, feel free to call back, because have we lost you, Mike? Yeah, okay. Do me a favor. Just jump on with him, and if you can bring him back, we can get to him in a moment. And if he does get disconnected, Mike, you can still maybe hear me on the radio. We just lost him. Mike, feel free to call back and continue the conversation. In the meantime, Frank and Air. Frank, you are next on the RingCentral NYSAC call line with Professor William Jacobson. Go ahead, Frank.
Hello, Dan and Professor Jacobson. Your last visit together was, to me, a lot of fun as you danced together in political and Elizabeth High Warren's political grave after the primaries. But tonight, I think, is very, very gravely important to all of us.
Just a clarification, I'm hoping that Vice President Biden picks Elizabeth Warren as his vice presidential candidate. Frank, you've heard me talk about that.
I'm
sad to see her walk away from the, you know, from the national stage. I think that she would be the perfect running mate for Joe Biden. But that's a story for another night.
Oh, great.
Go right ahead, Frank.
Yeah, I'm a Cornell graduate from 1965, and then again in February 68. And during those days, academic integrity was absolutely their paradigm that was observed by everybody in every discipline throughout the entire university. And I get the impression from what you were saying at the beginning of the program that you are coming under attack from the politically correct type of person. And I'm very, very concerned to know how serious you think that attack is and whether academic integrity is still the norm, the paradigm at Cornell, or whether we may be into another age now.
Well, I think there's a couple of aspects here. First of all, the law school has announced that I won't be fired over this, but it's very troubling to me that there's an atmosphere at the law school where students are afraid to speak up.
I think it's very concerning.
And it's also very troubling to me that there is a boycott of the course, which I think is extraordinary. Not so much that they're boycotting the course, but that they're insisting that other students boycott the course. Nobody's obligated to take my class. It's a small class. We usually oversubscribe several times over. But what that means is that I teach investment disputes. That's my specialty. And because it's a subject that has a lot of interest among students, there's a lot of students who want to take it. But now those students have been put in a position that taking my course could be deemed a political act against the Black Lives Matter movement.
Which
is depriving those students of their choice, their free choice, to pursue the education that they want. And that's very troubling to me. To the best of my knowledge, no one has spoken out administratively or from the faculty about how corrosive it is to have a boycott of a professor's course. And again, not just the boycott, but demanding that others boycott it as well, I think is extremely corrosive. And the people who are getting harmed here more than me, I mean, I have job protection. I have, you know, I'm probably not going to get fired over this, but the students are the ones who have been silenced. The students are the ones who are being deprived of their educational opportunities, and they're all afraid to speak up. Nobody is speaking up for these students who have been bullied into silence.
Now, at the beginning of the first caller, Dan came up with an action plan to try to get some non-acknowledgement of your position and support for your position. As a Cornell alumnus, is there some action plan I could be taking part of, or where would I find the most sensitive point at Cornell to make my feelings known?
Well, you know, I'm hesitant to encourage any particular sort of action. I know a lot of alumni have written to the president of the university expressing
the president,
concern.
Okay.
But obviously anybody who writes should be polite, and I'm not encouraging it or not, but the president is essentially the CEO of the whole university. So I think that is the person who needs to hear from people.
Let me ask you, Frank, do you contribute as an alumnus to your alma mater?
I've been contributing since 1965, yeah.
Well, I would make note of that in the letter. I will make note of that. Frank, I'm up on my break. I got to let you go. We'll talk soon. Thanks so much, my friend.
Thank you, Jim. Follow through.
There's something for you to do on the 4th of July. Thanks, Frank. Jeanette, next on Night Side with Professor William Jacobson of the Cornell University Law School. Go ahead, Jeanette.
Thank you, Dan. And thank you, Professor Jacobson. I don't think anybody should be afraid to speak their mind, especially now, this time of year. This is the greatest country in the world. And as far as the Black Lives Matter, I totally agree with you. It doesn't matter how much money they have. I believe they're a terrorist organization.
Jeanette, I got to tell you, I don't even think Professor Jacobson would go that far with you.
I'd like to say my piece. It is America.
No, you can say your piece, but I just want to make sure that you say it and then give him a chance to respond. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to say that it doesn't matter the color of our skin. To be an American, you have to obey the laws, the law and order. And I believe the broad brush of painting the whole police department in this whole country, they've been on assault. I've seen the Black Lives Matter on one side, and I saw the protesters on their side, and I saw the police, the people that belong to the law and order, the police on the other side.
Okay,
we shouldn't be taking sides for that.
Jeanette, I don't mean to interrupt, but we have very few minutes left here, and we've talked, and we will talk about police. We talked about police last hour.
Right. But I do want to say this. Since George Floyd, since that, we are a nation of individuals. We're not a nation of just, you know,
Jeanette, I'm running out of time. I think you've made your points, but they're collateral to what we're talking about tonight. Let me get Professor Jacobson. Professor Jacobson, she characterized BLM as a terrorist organization. I don't think that is true. Can you comment?
Yeah, I've never called the movement or the organization a terrorist group. There may have been individuals who have committed acts that we might call domestic terrorism, sure. But I've never called the group a terrorist organization. I think they're misguided. I think they're destructive. I think they tolerate, if not encourage, at least the leadership tolerates, if not encourages violence. But I have not and would not call them a terrorist organization.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Jeanette, I'm not trying to change your mind, but I just wanted to make that clear. Okay. Thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it. We have, I believe it's a 24-second soundbite, Professor. Of one of the leaders, they're talking about Marxism or identifying as a Marxist? This kind of goes back to the first call we had with Jack from Newton. Can you describe this sound?
Yeah, this has recently been going around. One of the founders and really the leading voice of the movement describing her political philosophy and that of her other co-founder.
Okay, and what is her name, if you know?
It is Patrice Cullors. I may be mispronouncing the last name.
Okay, Rob, can you play that soundbite? Because again, this is a soundbite which I think Jack from Newton may be particularly interested in. We'll just play that soundbite, Rob.
I think of a lot of things. The first thing I think is that we actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. We are super versed on sort of ideological theories.
So she sounds like a very intelligent woman. I think that she does understand what Marxism is, if Jack is still listening. I appreciate that. So that is the sort of comment that you're basing your allegations of leadership being inclined towards Marxism. And I think that's pretty substantive. Let's go to Tom in Brockton. Tom, you're next on Night Side on the Ring Central Night Side Caller Line. Want to get you in under the wire here. Maybe room for you in one more. Go ahead, Tom.
It's obvious that if you read their about of where they want to get rid of Western patriarchal families, I'm paraphrasing, but honestly, I studied Russian history in high school, and with these movements, Marxist movements, somebody with it might have been Lenin said there cannot be revolution without bloodshed, and the other point being is that the Gang of Four, who did the Cultural Revolution in the mid 60s to the mid 70s, what ended up happening to them when Chairman Mao died? The masses turned on them, and they ended up having a trial. So, you know, for all these academics that are so smart, that are so educated, that have that cannot get their heads out of their rear ends and understand what this movement is really about, they're a bunch of intellectual cowards. And I've said it in the past that Alan Dershowitz brought Malcolm X to Harvard University back in the early 60s, a guy who was an extremist at that time, who spoke to a largely upper-income white audience. And he was a radical. And now you can't even bring on a guy who's Jewish that leans conservative yeah. on a college campus without having riots and a bunch of spoiled brats. I can't stand what's going on in this country right now. And I am never, ever going to capitulate to Black Lives Matter. And I quit the church I went to in Brockton because I started hearing that same crap at the pulpit. And I go to church to learn about the teachings of Jesus Christ, not some political hack at a pulpit.
All right. Well, I want to give you, Tom, I want to give you some hope, because the next caller, I think, who we're going to end this hour with is a high school student. And I think you're going to enjoy this call. Tom, appreciate it very much. Thanks.
Thanks,
my friend. Talk to you. Let's go to Harry in Walpole. Harry, professor, should be teaching at Cornell. What year are you going into, Harry? Going to senior year?
Yes, that's correct.
Senior year. Say hi to Professor Jacobson. Harry, we've got about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Awesome. I just wanted to end on a high note. I don't know if you guys are talking about something good in America yet, but I'll cut to the chase. My dad has been a cop in Boston for over 3 decades. My uncles and aunts, they all have some affiliation with the Boston police. My mom is a nurse at Regis College, and she was also in the Boston police, and I'm a Boy Scout myself, coming up on Eagle pretty soon. And I got to tell you, Dan, I don't think I'd be the way I am today if I didn't grow up in the United States of America. I can promise you.
I think you're a great young man. I don't know where you're going to go to college, but wherever you go, you'll have an impact. You certainly will, Harry, and I wish I had more time with you. Check out Legal Insurrection, Professor
Absolutely.
Jacobson's website. I think you'll enjoy it. Harry, we'll talk soon. Have a great 4th of July. Best to everyone in your family, okay?
Thanks so much. Have a great 4th.
And thank your dad for what he's done. Couldn't finish on a better note, Professor William Jacobson. Yes. Thank you so much for doing what you have done and what you do. And please keep us posted. There's a lot of people tonight now who know your story and know what you're going through, and they know about your website. Let's keep on this. You have a right to express your opinions as an American and as a scholar. Yes, Professor, go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. And that Harry's comments do give me hope. And the comments I've received from a lot of students also give me hope. I mean, I think there, whether it's a majority or not, there's a lot of people who have been bullied into silence who do not agree with what's going on. And I think there's going to be a backlash one of these days.
And let's hope that it takes us to a higher place, into a better place. Professor William Jacobson of Cornell University. Coming back, we're going to talk about polygamy. And you can go to Somerville, and maybe they're going to have some polygamy there. You won't believe this story, but it's true. Coming back after Dan Watkins in the 10.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.